Krista St. Germain is helping widowed moms find love again. She's a master certified grief coach. She is a podcaster and the creator of the Mom Goes On program. Welcome back to the show, Krista.
Thanks for having me. Always happy to talk about grief.
Yeah, it's
Yep.
great to see you again. So refresh our memories. Tell us a little about your personal life, more about your work and why you do what you do.
School of hard knocks, mostly. I lost my husband when I was 40. We had just recently gotten married. He was killed by a drunk driver. And, you know, it just kind of went from a really high in my life to kind of the lowest low I could have ever imagined. And pretty quickly realized that what I thought I knew about grief and the tools that I was getting, you know, around grief, I thought I had just weren't really very effective. So I had to kind of go and do all of my own research and figure out what worked and what didn't. And when I got through to a better feeling place, I decided, okay, you know, I want to help other people with this. I want them to have an easier experience than I do. I would love to change the conversations that we're having around grief because we're not having nearly enough of them. So that's kind of how I got into it. And so I've been working with widows specifically since 2018. Yeah. Here
Long
we are.
time. It's,
Long time.
I mean, I'm sure that there is heavier work, but it's got to be some of the heaviest work.
It is.
How does it not weigh you down? Or maybe it does.
It doesn't really. And that seems to surprise people. And honestly, it surprises me. That's one of the reasons I considered not coaching widows for a while because I couldn't imagine it not being so heavy. But it really doesn't feel that way to me. I think it's just such a, we all experience grief. We don't all experience bereavement, but we all experience loss. And it is a part of the human experience. And I think the reason it feels so heavy oftentimes is because we don't have enough normalizing conversations around it. And so it really is just normalizing a lot of what is normal and then helping people uncover what's in the way of loving life again. And that to me feels amazing. It doesn't feel heavy. It's not to say grief isn't heavy, but the work doesn't feel that way.
I love words, and normalizing things that are normal is a good sentence.
T-shirt material right there. Yep.
Normalization of normal
Things that are
things.
normal. Yeah, I mean, people ask all the time, like, what's normal in grief? And it makes so much sense why they ask that question. And also, so many more things are normal than we're taught. You know, and so as a result of that, we tend to go through a grief experience and we assume that there's something wrong with us, when what would be a more accurate assumption is that we just weren't given accurate information about grief. You know, it's so much more normal, all these problems that we think are just us problems.
And why would we? It's like, I love talking about just do it. It's a great slogan for sneakers, but not if I don't know how to do it, then I can't just do it. So grief certainly falls into that.
Yeah, for sure.
And super normal for sure.
Super
So
normal.
having better tools and to find our way past it. It's a, I'm sure, a very unique experience, but with the right tools, we can experience post-traumatic growth.
Yeah, 100%. And I like to think about it as integrating it, right? So it's we don't ever get to the end of grief because grief doesn't end. Right. We're always going to have thoughts and feelings about a loss. We can't undo the loss. We can't time travel. The loss will always be there. So we'll always have a response to it. And grief, my favorite definition is it's the natural human response to a perceived loss. So we're always going to have it because we can't undo the event. The goal is, can we choose and cultivate an intentional relationship with it? Right. Instead of just being subject to all of the initial reactions that we have, can we choose our response to the way that we see what has happened and who we want to be after it has happened? So that's where post-traumatic growth comes in. Right. It's not just that we're necessarily trying to get back to where we were in terms of quality of life, although that is an option. Right. Post-traumatic growth says, actually, you can go on to report greater levels of life satisfaction after something that you experienced as traumatic. Right. And not in spite of the thing, but literally because of it, because of what you decided to change about, you know, the way that you see the world or the way that you see yourself or the way that you show up, you can go on to love life even more because of what happened. Doesn't mean you're going to be grateful that it happened. Doesn't mean you're going to like that it, you know, the way that it happened. It just means you always get to be the one in the driver's seat in terms of choosing how you see yourself and how you see your life.
Which is a beautiful thing, having agency.
Yeah, 100%.
Is Is that pretty common as people go through this process, through the grieving process, particularly of the loss of a spouse, that you feel like that agency's been taken from you? I guess to a degree it
Yeah,
has.
for sure. Yeah, it has. I think a huge part of it is like separating, what you can control from what you can't. I didn't choose to have that driver get behind the car and, make that choice. And so I definitely couldn't control that. But I do get to choose what I want to think about my life. I do get to be the one who decides to believe whether my best days are behind me or not. And for a long time, I didn't know that. Right? I thought it was just a fact that he died. That was the love of my life. Best days are behind me. Yea, verily. Right. And somebody had to point it out to me that, oh no, that's actually, you don't have to believe that if you don't want to. There's nothing wrong with you if you do, but you don't have to. Surprise.
It is, once you know it, it seems so silly that once I realize that I get to choose that, nobody else does. I get to choose how I think and feel about all the different scenarios of my life at any given moment. But before that, it was just, my thoughts are my thoughts, or that's me. I don't separate those things out.
Yeah, for sure. And I think some of that, some post-traumatic growth can even happen without you fully realizing that, to be honest. And I think it's helpful if you do realize it, but I think sometimes it just happens in that. So post-traumatic growth is typically experienced in five areas. So greater appreciation of life. Right? That often just happens. You don't necessarily have to choose that. When something has been taken from you that you cared about so very much, it kind of tends to make you appreciate the things that you have more than you did before. For me, I was just kind of going through life on what felt like a little bit of autopilot, midlife, doing the things, going to work, taking care of the kids, doing the things that you do. And then whoosh, like he's gone. And all of a sudden, you kind of look around and you go, holy crap, like if it can be taken this fast, like now I kind of appreciate things that maybe I was just not paying attention to before. I was taking them for granted. So greater appreciation of life just often happens without us trying. Improved relationships sometimes happens whether we like it or not, whether we're trying or not. So, you have a big loss or something that you experience as traumatic, and you kind of quickly figure out who's showing up for you and who's not. And maybe the people who aren't showing up for you are people that you now go, maybe I don't want to invest that much in that relationship. Maybe I want to invest more in these other people who did show up for me. Or maybe it's really clear to me who I am in relationship with that is aligned with my values and who's not. Right. And so I make some decisions based on that. And I don't even have to know that I have a huge sense of agency to do that. I just kind of naturally do it. Yeah. Increased personal strength is about realizing that you're maybe stronger than you thought you were. That you can handle things that maybe you didn't think you can handle. People always say when they're talking to widows, I can't imagine if that were to happen to me, I would just fall apart. Well, yeah, I know you think that, but then you get there and you may fall apart temporarily, but you keep going. Most of us do. And you realize, oh, I didn't think I could get through something like that, but here I am and I'm getting through it. I see myself as stronger than I thought that I was before. That perception changed. Spiritual growth often happens whether we like it or not. Sometimes that means that we are railing against the beliefs that have been handed to us. Right now, they don't make sense anymore. They don't actually fit our life experience. And so we go back and do an inventory of like, wait a minute, did I choose this for myself? Is this what I actually believe? Do I need to do some wrestling here and some choices for myself? So sometimes, people's spiritual paths get moderated slightly, sometimes they completely change and they choose a different way for themselves, and then the fifth category is new possibilities. And that often happens as well. That's what happened to me. It's not that my job wasn't a lovely job. It was paying the bills. I like the people I work with, but did I love it? Did I feel like I was absolutely making the difference that I wanted to make? No, I didn't, And I went, okay, if it can be taken this quickly, is this how I want to spend 40 hours a week? Nope. New possibilities, new careers, new things.
Beautiful
So
things.
yeah, beautiful things. Does any of that make me grateful my husband died? No. For me, it's a big misconception about post-traumatic growth. They have to be grateful that it happened. It drives me crazy.
I was actually thinking sort of not necessarily the opposite, but I don't want to allow myself to do that because I'll feel guilty.
Yes, that too. Yeah, like how, what does it mean about my love for them if I go on to report greater levels of life satisfaction? Does it mean something? Yeah, we have to kind of realize that like both can coexist. We can be tremendously sad that it happened, you know, and also still not lose our agency in deciding how we want to live life. We can acknowledge that they died or this thing happened and we are still living and our quality of life matters. But yeah, guilt can hold us back in a big way and often does.
Is there a right time, an appropriate time to start to think about what you want your life to look like moving forward?
Well, I would say there was a point for me, and I see it often, where if someone had started talking to me about post-traumatic growth, I would have wanted to throat punch them. So that's probably not the right time.
Too soon. Too soon.
Too soon. Just too soon. Boom. But I also think that there was a part of me that knew, even very quickly after he died, that I was going to make some sort of meaning out of this. You know, having, I don't know, it's different for everyone, but that definitely happened for me. And I say, you don't need to rush it. It's not morally superior to grow after you experience loss, right? It's not a should. We don't want to add it to our to-do list. And so if ever it feels like a should, or if ever it feels misaligned, then we can just not pursue it. And then maybe at a later date, it won't feel that way. Or maybe it always will. And that's okay too.
Right. So as we are, you have on your website, the healing grief spiral that with three steps, settle the storm inside, choose your thoughts intentionally, and then take meaningful action. So choose your thoughts intentionally. It seems like that's in a lot of ways what it is that we're talking about. I get to choose, and then I get to choose the future that I want.
Yeah. Yeah. And sometimes that's hard to do before we have settled the storm right inside. And I see this spiral as something that is in constant repetition. So we might notice that it's stormy or we're dysregulated, you know, different language for similar things. And we're not really able to think about our thinking at that point. So the first thing we need to do is settle the storm, right? Get ourselves back into a grounded and centered place. And then when the higher part of our brain is available to us and we actually can think about our thinking, which can be really hard to do if it's not, or if we're in acute grief and the grief fog is intense, it's very difficult to think about your thinking in that place. But when you get to the point where you can think about your thinking, then you get to say, okay, wait a minute. Do I want to believe that my best days are behind me? Because that feels really real. But I can see that if I keep believing that thought, my brain is just going to keep finding evidence for it. It's only going to show me the truth of that thought, right? How the best days are behind me. It will hold me back from seeing anything that doesn't line up with that thought. And I will always just keep proving it true. So if I don't find it particularly useful, then I get to be the one who calls BS on it, right? And gets to choose. Wait, do I want to believe that? What if that's not the only way of thinking about my life? What else is available to me? It's possible that my best days aren't behind me. It's possible that my best days are ahead of me. And then once I do that work of choosing my thoughts with purpose and intentionally, then the actions flow from that, right? What is a person who believes that her best days are ahead of her, or at least doesn't believe that her best days are behind her? What type of action does she take that creates more of what it is that she wants? Repeat, repeat, repeat.
And I imagine as we try to do anything that's worthwhile, difficult, just need to take small bites.
I prefer it that way. I think it's an easy way to get ourselves unstuck, right? Is what's the next smallest step I can take? And especially if we're looking at doing things that are outside of our current confidence or our current ability, which is often the case after something big happens, right? Like for me, starting a business and becoming a coach, I didn't know how to do that, right? But I was pretty determined I was going to figure it out. And so it's what's the next smallest thing that I can do that feels aligned? And then I start getting some traction because I keep just doing the next smallest thing.
which helps to develop so many wonderful things. You're proving to yourself that you're capable of doing it and executing on what you told yourself that you would do. And you start to develop, obviously, you learn how to do the thing. And so that gets easier because being a beginner is exciting in some regard, but also terrifying and anxiety producing in others. But you just, that's, I think, how you develop willpower too, is just do it a little bit at a time. And then that willpower is going to bring you from where you are to where it is you really want to be in the future.
For sure. It's also helpful, I think, to connect to a really solid why. You know, if we can, that definitely helped me. Is I actually had a picture printed out of a woman who I imagined was a widow. I didn't even know that she was, but I just had, you know, her picture printed out of like, this is the woman I am trying to reach. She is out there. Like, what's her day like today? What are her struggles today? And that kind of helped me get over my own nonsense of like, hey, you know, get over it. You need to create some content for social media or go live. Do the thing you're scared to do because your why is bigger than the fear that you feel.
I'd love to see that picture.
Oh, yeah. I don't have it in my office anymore, but I could show it to you. It was black and white. I
Yeah.
just pasted it on the wall right above my computer.
How did you figure that out?
I don't know, honestly. I don't
Because I'm
remember.
certainly
It's
a
been
fan
so.
of just connecting with some human being that is doing what it is or has the thing that I want to prove to myself that it's that this person did it, be it fictitious or a story that I had have made up. But I look to this person, I realize, hey, Stacy or Susie or John did this or is doing it. Therefore, I can as well.
I love that, right? And I think that was a much easier thing to do in terms of looking around and seeing, oh, there are people in helping professions, help, you know, serving other people. I wasn't seeing that so much in the widow space. So, you know, it's kind of why I just picked a woman and imagined. Just imagine, like, also, I imagined where would I be if I didn't have the tools that I had? What was the potential change in trajectory there for my life? And so then it's easier to imagine. Wow. Okay. If I, what's the cost of me not sharing what I know? It felt important.
Yeah. And it turns out you were right.
Turns out people actually do want help.
Everybody.
I say that kind of like laughing at it now, but there was a time where there was a lot of drama in my brain about getting over my own stuff. Even after I had coached one-on-one and like filled a practice and had all the clients I could handle, it was still hard for me to switch to coaching in groups and serving widows in that way. Because of the brain drama, thoughts that needed to be chosen intentionally, right?
Just you thought it wouldn't be efficient in a group setting, or
Well, I was just afraid they wouldn't be comfortable in groups. I was afraid they would only want one-on-one, that they wouldn't want to come to a group. But I also kept coming up against the same frustrating wall, which was that I was having repetitive conversations, and it was difficult to get them to believe that I wasn't a special unicorn, right? Instead, when I can get them in a group and they can see themselves reflected in other women, then they go, oh, it's not just a me problem. It's not a character flaw. This is grief. This is widowhood, right? And it wasn't just the coach saying it, which is why I now, you know, am so passionate about getting people into community. Because I just think we make progress faster because we can normalize stuff faster with the right coach or facilitator.
right. It's almost a living example of what we were just talking about with the picture of the person. Now, not only have we identified some other human being on the internet or whatever, but we're actually interfacing with them on a consistent basis.
And I love to have people in my programs that are in different places. So that there's always, you know, there's something to aspire to. Someone who's been where you are that you can see they are where you want to be, and they are encouraging you, and you are aspiring to, you know, be them, and it works.
It's one of those virtuous cycles you hear about.
Yeah, it feels so good. Yeah,
That's
totally.
awesome. Well, this has been another wonderful conversation, Krista. I appreciate you coming back on. How can people learn more about you? Tell us how people can find you and all your programs.
Yeah, so I'm a podcaster. The Widowed Mom Podcast is the name of my podcast. So welcome to come and listen. Even if you're not a widow, feel free to come and listen and just learn about grief and post-traumatic growth. And then coachingwithkrista.com, it's Krista, is where everything else can be found.
Excellent. Well, if you enjoyed this as much as I did, show Krista your appreciation. Share today's show with a friend who also appreciates good ideas. Listen to the Widowed Mom podcast, wherever you listen to your podcasts, and then go to Coaching with Krista. It's Krista.com and check out all the programs and everything else that we've been talking about today. Thanks again, Krista.
Thanks, George.
Until next time, remember, do your part by doing your best.